Ready?
1 second.
It's a recording.
It's recording.
So tonight we're talking about the Laver Cup.
Yes.
Which is very close to David's heart. He's without spoiler alert here, David's a big fan of the Laver Cup.
I'm one of those fanboys.
So can you tell listeners, just explain in a nutshell what the Laver Cup is, because it's only been going, what, 3 years? Is this the third edition has just taken place? So what is it? Whose idea and how did it come about?
Yeah, I love the Laver Cup. Laver, actually.
I call it Laver. Who is this Laver guy? Who is he?
Yeah, he's the only guy that had the...
We're talking calendar Grand Slams.
Calendar Grand Slams, yeah.
Not your Djokovic... Yeah. Poor man's Grand Slam.
Djokovic had one, but it was not the same one. Yeah,
not in the same year.
Not
Laver
in the same year.
Did it in the same year.
Two times.
Yeah, eight years apart. I think 1961, and I might be wrong.
Yeah,
Iwana will check this out.
Yes, I guess that's why he deserves a tournament in
Definitely.
His name.
This is something I really love about the Laver Cup, named after a great player, arguably even in this era of Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. Arguably the greatest ever to win two Grand Slams so far apart, and he would have won many more had it not been for him not being allowed to play.
He wasn't.
Well, this was the dawn of the amateur and the professional kind of thing. So he won his first Grand Slam as an amateur. Then he became professional. He played tennis for money. So he wasn't allowed to enter the Grand Slam tournaments. So he was kind of in the wilderness playing exhibition matches in assembly halls against other top players who'd gone professional. So Wimbledon, you know, they were without some of their star attractions because these players wanted to earn bread and butter. They couldn't just turn up at Wimbledon and pay their own travel expenses. I think you used to get shopping.
Different times.
You used to get shopping vouchers for winning Wimbledon. So I fully approve of the name of the Laver Cup. It's in honor of the great man. But well, what else do you like about the Laver
Cup? Yeah, so Federer came up with the idea, didn't he? Came up with this idea about a team game, and I don't follow the Davis Cup, but the Laver Cup has a different feel to it. And
that isn't spread over a week, is it? The Davis Cup
no,
is throughout the calendar.
It's forever, yes, and ever, and we lose track of what's going on.
Yeah,
we have to follow forever. And the tennis is kind of like on these little injections of tennis entertainment, and the Laver Cup does it in 3 days, but it's all stars.
Well, it's Europe against the rest of the world, isn't it? That's the concept. And I think Roger Federer came up with the idea. He was inspired by golf's Ryder Cup, which is big, big business, alternates between America and Europe. And, you know, is really something which is on golfers' wish list. The Laver Cup, you know, although you love it, it's not massive yet. It's very early on, isn't it? But there are no ranking points.
I wonder if there's ever going to be ranking points, actually.
Well, the ATP have just acknowledged it as
they
as,
did,
as
but,
ton, but still no ranking
yeah,
points.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
Would if, you like ranking points? For
what happens is if ranking points start coming into the Laver Cup, they would have to start having qualifications for the Laver Cup.
Well, it's the top-ranked players, isn't it? I don't think there are exceptions to that. Carl Edmonds, I think, not this year, but last year, he was in it because I think he was one of the eight top ranked.
I don't think it's like the O2 finals, you know.
We'll have to research that. And so it's a hard court men's tennis tournament. We'll come back to that because this is one of my gripes. I'm going to play devil's advocate, but I think there's lots of hard court tournaments. It'd
Too
be
many.
Nice, but it'd be nice if it was clay.
What about grass?
Out of the season, all grass.
Yeah, grass is the one that has less.
I'll be left field. A new surface, maybe sand or snow or something, make it a bit different from other tournaments. Held annually, it's the Ryder Cup of the tennis world. It takes place 2 weeks after the US Open. I think it would be better as preparation for a tournament. Now, you're asked about fees, how much they got. Each member of the winning team gets $250,000 in prize money. Doesn't count towards the ATP tour. But as we said earlier, it is a sanctioned.
It's not bad money.
One thing I really like about it is there's a slightly unusual points format.
Yes.
You get less points on day one,
I love it.
But the points increase On day two,
yes,
two
one
points
point
for a win.
And
on day three, 3 points.
Very different, yes. Day by day, the pressure and the importance of each match increases.
Snowballs.
Yes, it does. And you can even lose the first day, and then you can make it up in the second day.
Absolutely.
There's like 4 or 5 matches per day.
Yeah.
That includes doubles and singles, mostly singles, but there's always a doubles per day as well. So what I like about the Laver Cup is there is a different feeling about the Laver Cup than other tournaments have because of the team play.
Yes.
You nowhere on tennis grounds all over the world, on any tournament, are you able to see the camaraderie.
How well the players get on with each other.
The way they celebrate as a team. And you get to see Nadal and Federer coach each other. It's not about the ranking. It's not about so much the money. Almost like a celebration of tennis. Really, it's about that feeling of sharing as a team. It's all great players.
They're all stars.
They're all stars.
Yeah.
And so I can't help to feel this warm feeling about the way they celebrate together. And
how seriously do they take it? Do you ever see needle between the opposition
players? That's a great question.
Does team ever kind of question the umpire, or let me think, does Kyrgios ever kind of give the eyeball to his opponent?
For the first time this season 3 of Laver Cup, there was a little bit of a dispute. McEnroe was disappointed because Nadal got injured for the Europe team.
Yeah.
And then for the reason of not being able to put the same player, McEnroe, by the way, the world's coach, had to put a weaker player against team. So he couldn't use the same player again. I think it's about not repeating the same matchup, but it ended up being okay because he beat team, and at that point, the world was on top.
Now, Federer was taking a very active part. He said you really like the fact. You could see things like Federer coaching Nadal and vice versa. I missed those bits. Could you hear any of the advice? Because they were mic'd up.
You could hear a lot of dialogue going on between the teams. You could hear the coaching in lots of different languages. Nadal was speaking in Spanish sometimes. Federer was speaking German to Zverev here and there.
Yeah.
There was a lot of English going on as well.
Sure, yes.
And you asked the question, is it important enough for them? At the interviews at the end of each tournament, the players say it's their favorite tournament of the year.
That's a ringing
endorsement. It's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's because of the feeling, of the emotions they feel there.
Yeah.
It's not the most important for them.
But here's a question for you. If you were one of the top players and you were coaching one of your rivals, they were in the same team as you, let's say Team Europe, would you give away your secrets? Would you go, look, this guy, every time he sticks his tongue out, I know he's going to serve down the tee. Would you give away a secret because it might help this person?
Yeah, I would. I wouldn't
mind. Or
would you
just say, you're playing so well, your forehand is so good, and just keep it vague?
Nadal definitely didn't. He was very, very clear about... Actually, Nadal was very emotional about the way he was coaching. So you could see passion.
Who would be the best coaches out of these players who featured? Bjorn Borg, probably my biggest hero in tennis. He doesn't seem to contribute much. He just kind of sits there. And actually, McEnroe was quite passive compared to the actual players on the sidelines.
Bjorg doesn't have a chance with Federer and Nadal constantly coaching their players.
They were like statues, weren't they?
Yes,
ornaments.
They were just sitting
gnomes.
There. They're like kind of a more a symbolic thing than anything.
Definitely.
I'm sure they, because of what they represent from their history, they are definitely making a difference.
They've been announced too. They're going to be doing it next year.
A few more
would
years,
like
at least.
Would you like to see someone different?
I wouldn't mind the changing, yes.
Who would you like to see? Lendl? Becker?
Wow, Lendl. Wow, that would be an interesting one.
That'd be feisty, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Pat Cash?
That would be interesting. Pat Cash, why not?
Ilie Nastasi. Now that would be controversial. Do you know Ilie Nastasi?
Tell me about it.
Ilie Nastasi is a Romanian tennis player from the 70s. Very good player, very talented player, very temperamental. I suppose the closest person you could compare him to is Nick Kyrgios. He was mad. in a way, but very good. One of the top players. He would like borrow a spectator's umbrella during a vital match at Wimbledon. But yeah, he's a very controversial figure. Probably not the best choice to coach Team Europe.
But I don't mind those. You know, it's for the entertainment. If you're talking about this guy being controversial, Kyrgios, in the Laver Cup, he's positive from the first minute to the last. There's no negative coming from that guy as a coach.
Maybe a better team player. I think he's a big basketball fan, so maybe team sports was his thing.
I think it is. There is a very good sentence Nadal said in the interview at the end. I don't know if you heard it. This was at the end on the last interview after they won it.
Because he was probably quite upset that he couldn't play throughout. Understandable after his US Open heroics.
Losing is less painful together. Winning is much better together.
Very eloquent. I mean, these tennis players, I think their intelligence translates onto the tennis court.
It does. And not only, and you were asking who were the better coaches at the Laver Cup. Kyrgios, Nadal and Federer. They were awesome. They were always positive. Even Zverev admitted at the end that he won that last match because Nadal and Federer were just keeping him focused.
Was he wearing his jewelry in this
four
match?
I think I counted four.
Could Nadal and Federer not have persuaded him to shed some of it?
I think it would have been wise, wouldn't it?
Taking some of it down the pawnbrokers.
Yes, I think when he removes those chains, he will win a Grand Slam.
He'll be flying.
He will be. It's going to be incredible.
Absolutely, yeah. I think he's wearing them just to kind of like, so it seem easier when he takes them off.
Yes.
It's all part of the strategy. So do you think Europe-America, do you think that's the right thing? Should it...
Well, it's Europe versus the world.
Yeah.
But right now, Europe has a lot of players from all over the place.
Yes, it's slightly unbalanced, isn't it?
Whereas the world has... We wanted Del Potro there, but he's injured.
Definitely,
we wanted
.
Nishikori there, but maybe he didn't accept or wasn't invited. I don't know.
Yeah.
I wonder why. There's a lot to discover about this. So, yeah, I'm still very curious to know how they choose the players. I really want to know.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that strikes me is, I know it's not that serious a tournament yet, but yeah, we did mention it's unbalanced at the moment. Yeah.
But every single year, it goes down to the last match.
Is this a fix? Am I being cynical?
Well, I think that if it would be wired, programmed, the tennis players are amazing at doing it.
Yeah.
Because they hit those lines, man.
Which is probably why match fixing is so hard to police.
It's very difficult. I mean, you'd really have to throw in some really bad unforced errors to be able to do that. But no, it couldn't be. And there's something special about the Laver Cup. I don't know how it's happening, how these team worlds, they were ahead in the last day, you know?
Yeah.
By 4 points or five.
Yeah.
And suddenly Federer had to beat Isner. And then Zverev had
doesn't
to
always
beat...
Doesn't do it. Isner's beaten him before in real tournament.
He did. With those...
This isn't a real tournament, but in
ranking
tournaments.
I love how you say that. I think it's more of a celebration of tennis and...
David, you've convinced me. I think I'm being too harsh on the tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy what I saw of it. I tried to watch as much as I could.
Yeah,
I'm not going to complain. It's another tennis tournament.
Agreed.
And it's on TV and a normal person like me can press my remote button fairly easily and actually watch it. So I think that's a good thing. What I like about it too is that it's over 1 week. So you can like tune in and it's a nice week.
3 days. Very quick.
How I would improve it. I do miss the fact there are no women in it, actually. This is something I like so much about the Hopman
Cup.
That's
what we've been talking about, isn't
it? And wouldn't it be great to see the interaction
on the
sidelines?
What are they waiting for?
Oh, look, there's Serena Williams kind of whispering in Jack Sachs.
I went to investigate.
Federer's eyeballing Venus Williams.
Yes.
This would be good too. It's lovely to see males interact. But wouldn't it be great to see male and female interaction on the sideline?
Yeah. Yes.
Let's have it on grass.
Mm-hmm. Grass, I agree. Mm-hmm.
Wimbledon can host it in the winter.
Mm, why not?
Maybe over Christmas it could be called Crimbledon. But it's nice. It's around the world. It's been in Prague, Chicago,
yes.
Boston.
And it's always bouncing between
Boston.
Europe and the world.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's Australia's turn, but they've got the Hopman Cup.
So yes, now it's back to America, the next one.
Can I wrap it up with, I'll give you a hypothetical dilemma here, okay?
Go.
I've got tickets for the ATP World Finals or the Olympic Tennis Finals. You can watch
that's a good one as well.
The men's doubles, the wheelchair, the curly-haired Olympics final, or the Olympics finals.
Mm-hmm.
And the third choice is, of course,
the
Laver Cup. But you can only choose one for this prize.
I would go to the Laver Cup.
You'd go to the Laver Cup.
But only for one reason.
Because you've been to the...
Been to the O2 many times.
I should have thought this before I asked the question.
I don't have such interest in the Olympics tennis. True. Although I love the Olympics. I would go and watch, Bolt run. I think it's great that every sport should be part of the Olympics. But I think that there is a stronger aura about the Olympics than just tennis.
What's nice, the thing about the Olympics is you actually will get someone like Andy Murray, who won it, actually staying in the Olympics village, which is nice for them.
It's, yes.
Okay, us, the fans, don't get to see that. What this is my clincher, hopefully, mm-hmm. for the listeners, is the it's not just about the winners. The bronze medal playoff actually means something. You can win a bronze medal.
Yes. I think as a player, it means more than as a fan, at least for me.
Right.
Although I do like to see the Olympics tennis as well. So if the same question were to you, what would you prefer to go to?
I think the Olympics, really.
If you go to the Olympics to watch, you get not only to watch tennis, but you watch a lot more.
That's true.
It's a special moment.
That wasn't part of my option, though. It wasn't.
It's true, but...
Yes, that's good. Well, I should have said that. You can also watch the beach volleyball.
Yes, and the running, and you're surrounded by sports. It must be a great moment. Yeah.
I'm warming to the Laver Cup.
Took some time.
So, roll on next year, Chicago, Boston, wherever it is.
I have a lot of good emotions with the Laver Cup. It's a good celebration of tennis, and I love to see the rivals hug and, you know, help each other. It's a beautiful moment.
And another thing for the champions tiebreak, isn't it? It's another kind of occasion.
Makes it faster.
You know, kind of
exciting.
Maybe a kind of rule change, which brings me to my next item. A new idea by popular demand.
Yep.
We could not resist it. We've resisted it for the first two episodes. But a new segment to the show. I believe there's a theme tune which goes with this part of
the
show.
Here we go.
Ivana, again, she's been working overtime to come up with the theme tune.
Talking about rule change. Talking about
rule change. So, rule change basically is where David and I both come up with a proposed rule change to implement into the world of tennis.
Yes.
And we have to say whether we agree with each other's proposed rule change. And anyone watching out there on social media can leave a comment and see if they agree or disagree, like or dislike.
Yeah. Okay, I'll go first.
Take a deep breath.
I'll say two things. One is not a rule change. It's just stop with the music between the
disco
games. Yes, but that's not a rule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, for the rule change, I would start with... I would cut grunting.
How would you enforce this? Would you have someone with a measuring device? So it'd be based on decibels?
Maybe. It's so difficult, isn't it? Because the grunting
in... This is a good topic.
It is. The grunting in some players is almost obnoxious because they will do four or five different kinds of sounds.
I think it would help, actually. I think it is unsportsmanlike, especially... If you only grunt on certain shots, if it's consistent grunting, I find that I get used to it and it's not a problem. But if my opponent suddenly grunts when he hits a shot,
mm-hmm.
or they even call the ball out sometimes when you hit it, they make little noises which make you think, have you called that out? And you stop.
Yes.
That's very off-putting. I think if I tried grunting, which I've never really been a grunter, I think it probably helps your rhythm. It's a repetitive thing where you're hitting the ball. It must help your timing.
That's why it's such a difficult topic, you know, for putting a rule and removing it. Have you seen a match between Azarenka and Sharapova?
With the sound down. With the sound down, yeah.
It's incredible what happens.
Do women grunt more than men, do you think?
I don't think so. There's a lot of grunting going on.
Sharapova's a shrieker, really, isn't she?
Oh, yes. That's more than grunting.
Definitely a shrieker, yeah.
Yes. And Serena, when she's getting very nervous, that is more than a grunt. That is an aggressive war cry. You see, we can understand why human beings and tennis players do this kind of stuff. It goes back to the time, it's primeval, so that's why it's difficult to put a rule and say no. But then again, oh my God, tennis would be a lot better off without...
This is the problem. I think it's a great thing, and I second that.
So how come you don't grunt?
Stopping grunting.
You have to start grunting against me when we play.
My role model when growing up was Bjorn Borg, who would never grunt. So I think it's a bit uncool to grunt. My thing has always been almost pretend that you don't care on court, so your opponents will kind of take it easy on you. But that's just my thing.
But that's what we do.
I can understand the psychology of grunters. I really can. But I think at the level that I play at, grunting's been less of a problem. There are lots of other annoying things which people do, like
bad calls.
Celebrate when you hit a ball, as if to say, yes, that your ball's out, and you're about to query it, but they're celebrating so much you look stupid for going,
yes,
I'm really sorry, I thought that ball was in. So there are other things, I think, at my level, but I'm sure at professional level,
that
grunting is more of a problem than at my level. And in terms of watching it,
mm-hmm,
I don't think I dislike a player because they grunt. If I don't like the player anyway and they grunt,
it's even worse.
It gives me a reason to dislike them, but
yeah,
I probably
sure
dislike them anyway.
Yeah.
Sharapova, I've always been a bit of a fan of. So her grunting doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
I just imagine she's doing some gardening. We're living together and it's particularly taxing in the garden. But if it's a player I don't like and they grunt, it's more reason to dislike them.
Great points. I like them all. You know, it's a difficult thing to change. That was talked about a few years ago at the professional level. But I also don't dislike players just because of the grunting.
Yeah.
But I do tend to have more players that I like that grunt less than players that grunt.
Sure, so
somehow. The personalities are very apparent. The grunters are looking for a bit more of themselves in the grunt, whereas players that don't grunt have it without needing it.
Yeah, they make tennis look effortless, the non-grunters.
Yes, they have more style because of that. I mean, I'm sure there are out there lots of people that fall in love with the grunting. They even like a player because of the grunting, because it somehow attaches to their emotion and they like it.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite. I prefer the guys that are the silent killers.
Do you think grunters are drama queens or drama kings?
There you go. That's a very good word.
Yeah.
But then, of course, you get players like Nadal that has moments that he grunts and he doesn't, and we've learned to respect his grunting a lot.
Yeah.
But still, I think it's a very good word is drama queens.
I like your suggestion. I've very nearly changed my choice for tonight, down to your suggestion to do a similar thing about bad habits of tennis players.
Yes, towels,
which is annoying
stuff
to watch or to play against.
Yeah.
So my suggestion is, veterans tennis, I would like to see it have a place in Grand Slam tournaments. So when I say veterans tennis, I mean the kind of tennis where McEnroe, Sampras, Agassi, they play the occasional tournament at the Royal Albert Hall. And there is a circuit. They play about 12 or 13 tournaments a year around the world. And I think the rule is you have to be either over 35 or retired from tennis for 2 years or 1 year.
Oh, but Federer is 37, 38, and Serena is 38.
Definitely they would. But
wow, they would be destroying.
This was unheard of years ago. When it was founded by Jimmy Connors, because he was a businessman as well as a tennis player, and he had this veterans tournament, and then McEnroe kind of came along, took over from Connors, which Connors wasn't too happy about. And it was a great chance to see the stars of yesteryear play these tournaments. Could even come into Grand Slams or...
hopefully
ATP,
not.
ATP tours. Nice little aside there, I think. So, but what I would like to see is the Grand Slams welcome it and actually have on Wimbledon as a curtain raiser for, say, the men's final or the females final, you'd have the veterans would play in the, on the outside courts during the tournament, and then on finals day they'd have their little tournament, they'd have their little thing,
their little moment to shine again.
But it would be important. You could be the Wimbledon kind of veterans champion. I think there's a cliff edge when players retire, when they fall off, and like, it's not the same, is it, commentating as playing?
No.
Wouldn't that be something to aim for if you retire and you've got this desert beyond you if you're not playing these top matches?
I like
that.
You
could still be a veteran champion and still play in front of 10,000 people at Wimbledon before the main thing. So what do you think? Is that a bad idea or not?
I think it's a good idea if they manage to fit it in.
Now, this brings me to my next point.
Yes.
Very good point. Mm-hmm. How would they fit it in?
Because I think it's great.
This is the controversial part of my plan.
Yes, because I would love to watch Sampras Agassi again. You know, I grew up with them. Why
definitely.
Not? Even if they're a little bit older, they still can hit some balls. There are some tournaments out there every once in a while I see. I don't know if it's in Grand Slams. You've seen it before. On the side courts, you get to see it.
It's doubles.
It's doubles.
And I want to see singles.
Yeah, wow, you're going to push their bodies to the limit.
We played
doubles. That's another limitation.
It's great, but how would you fit it in? I would say at the expense of maybe doubles. I think they could play on the outside court.
Well,
say
go tell that to the UK. The UK loves doubles. It and could. Now you got me excited. The moment you said they take the doubles out and put singles of the classic players, I'm all in.
Picture this, David. 10 years' time. 5 years' time. 5 years' time. Federer, Nadal, veterans final.
Yes, why not?
Before Medvedev versus Dan Evans at the main.
Sounds good.
Would you rather watch that or the Laver Cup?
I would watch Nadal versus Federer.
What a great way to end the episode.
For sure.
So that's a yes then.
It's a yes. As long as we minimize doubles, I'm happy.
What a great way to end.
Yeah.
So we will see you next time out.
Yeah.
This was Unforced Errors, two old guys talking about tennis.
Yeah.
See you next episode.